grade cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grade Cricketer on the Diamantina Podcast Network. Usman Khawaja is on the show. It's another big show this week. Before then, we're going to be getting into yet another loss for the Australian cricket team. They lost by 21 runs to South Africa on the Gold Coast of all places. That's where they lost another game of cricket. Before then, we're going to be getting into some talks about what's happening with the Cape Town 3. Then we will be discussing England's victory, 2-0 series victory in Sri Lanka. They've won in Asia. I don't know how they've done that. We're also going to be talking about the T20 World Cup. And, of course, Virat Kohli is in the country and he's brought all of his Indian cricket team mates. Adelaide and Perth, we're having a live show. You already know it, Melbourne and Sydney after that. But Adelaide and Perth, we're coming real soon to you and get behind us. These shows are going to be raucous, mainly because they're around the test matches and people are going to be loose AF.
We're going to be loose because those are our early shows.
So Adelaide live show, special guest Ed Cowan, Thursday, December 6th in the Rhino Room. Where do you get your tickets from? Here goes, you get them on our Facebook page. Go to Facebook and you'll see the tour there. And then Perth at the Wacker. The Grey Cricketers going to the Wacker. This is mental. Friday, 14 December. Tickets, where do you get them from? Here goes, you get them from our Facebook page. Go there, click the events tab. You'll find them. You'll find them. My name's Ian Higgins, and I'm joined, as ever, by Sam Perry and Dave Edwards. Boys, welcome.
It's great to be here. I think I'm here. Yeah. There was a lot of Ian Higgins references in that intro, which is good for your personal brand.
Yes.
But we're also on the show, too. But that's good. Good energy, boys. We're standing up.
It's going to be a good summer.
We're all standing up for this.
Yeah, there's a lot of consternation about cricket in Australia. We are all standing up. We're in the studio. Mm. We are standing up. There's a lot of consternation about cricket in Australia. It's funny because all the articles you read are about, oh, the schedule's shit. Mm. We're going to lose to India. We've got no batsmen. In fact, I wrote a piece about that last week to be self-referential already. We've got no batsmen, that the system's wrong. But still everybody's talking about it, aren't they? Oh, I think it could be a very close summer. Mm. Here goes. I think for the first time, we could have a live Sydney test, which we haven't had in our entire lifetime. Yeah, that's right.
What is that?
The test match cricket played at the SCG this summer could very well be alive. The series could be alive. Yes, what is this?
Not a dead rubber.
No, not a dead rubber.
I've heard of these.
I mean, there is upside to this sort of stuff. And before everyone starts thinking that we're now just a mouthpiece for CA, that's wrong. Plenty of criticism ahead for CA.
Keep listening, everyone from corporate affairs, CA.
But thanks for all of them for listening to our show last week. Somehow there were more listens than like Gilchrist and Steve Waugh and stuff. I mean, with respect to Kev, we'll call him Kev, to the head honcho, did not expect more people to listen to tune into that.
There were a lot of listeners from Jollymont on the Whoosh Granalytics.
Good point.
A lot of listeners from Jollymont.
Well, it's not all doom and gloom if you're a South African cricket fan, because they have now beaten Australia in an ODI series and an incongruous one-match T20 series that no one really understands because it was in the Gold Coast and there was like, it's wet season up there. Is it even tropical? I don't know.
Everything's binary, so I imagine.
So Australia lost yet another game of cricket. And I was talking to my housemates actually during the just before the game started, and I was like, I just expect Australia to lose every game of cricket they play at the moment. I expect us to lose all 3 1-dayers. We won one of them and lost the first and only T20, and now India coming for 3 T20s. They're one of the best T20 countries in the world. Virat Kohli averages about 165 in T20s.
So our expectations are soft going into India.
Soft, Dave.
Just wanted to let that breathe for a moment.
Yeah.
But it, you know, we have new expectations of our Australian cricket team, which is very, very strange, having grown up in the dominance eras. You know, Border, we got through those years. Then it was Taylor, War, Ponting, and it's just been wonderful until the Argus review, and then it went south.
Sam Perry, what's happening with our batting? Because we don't score as many runs as the other team do. Consistently.
I think there is a systemic problem with Australian batting. Let's say, first things first, our best two batsmen are not available. I still think these issues were there. So, did a piece last week. I talked to a bunch of people.
Yep.
Traditionally, you don't reveal your sources, and I will not do that either. Mm. Though I did speak to Greg Chappell, who was quoted. He was quoted in the piece.
Right.
And he's kind of the, like, if anyone is at the kind of peak of batting in Australia, who's got the most influence over the way things work, the structures, he's obviously like, he's a head honcho in terms of technique, in terms of politics, in terms of power. Like, even he admitted to being perplexed about why Australia's batting was struggling, and he used this idea of hitter versus batsman, which I found, or batter I should say, hitter versus batter, which I found quite interesting. And I think when you do look at Australia's batters, especially in white ball cricket, you can tell the difference between those that stand and deliver and those that can actually bat with a little bit of what Kerry O'Keefe calls rhythm, you know, can move the ball around and manipulate it a little bit. And I think we're lacking a few manipulators.
Right.
I think it's really difficult to bat across three formats anymore in cricket as well. You know, like you go in on a Tuesday, you leave the ball, you defend. You go in on Wednesday, you reverse sweep that same ball. It's hard to bat. I think it's harder now than it ever has been either. And I know people will say, well, bats are better than they used to be. Pitches are a lot better. Mm. But like, if you're a young guy coming through and you have a choice to make around, like, do I invest all my time in long form batting, the sort of batting that we want to see, the sort of batting that will mean that Sydney Test cricket or the Sydney Test match will be dead because we'll have already won by two innings.
I wonder if you guys were watching the T20 series. Well, I know you were because we're about to talk about it. But Mark Waugh and Shane Warne of the same kind of ethos were the smug oversimplification of cricket. And he was kind of criticising people for moving around at the crease. You're not allowed to move around at the crease. You just have to stand and deliver.
It was. But Mark Waugh just said, just keep your head still.
Just stand there.
And just get them on the full. Yeah, I honestly do think that, like, more than ever before, the advice of previous generations is, like, less relevant from a technical point of view. Mm. You know, we're going to talk about England Sri Lanka later, and Joe Root was talking about how to play Sri Lankan spinners. Let's just get really technical now by, like, creating angles and stuff like that. We don't do that.
Yeah. Well, no, let's get into it, because there was also a thing posted on Fox Sports about just like, hey, Australian cricket fans, we're going tough, but here's 10 wickets of England getting out sweeping. They just won a test series in Sri Lanka 2-0.
Exactly.
They had the second test match was an absolute belter, by the way. Really went down to the last day, final morning of of day five. Cracking test match. Joe Root's got an unbelievable 100.
Yeah.
Jimmy Anderson batting 11 with Sam Curran at the end. They put in 60 for the 10th wicket. Just really, just amazing batting in those conditions. But like, no, you're not supposed to do that. I just want to get it back to Greg Chappell. I don't get the Greg Chappell. Like, he's everyone's dad's favourite player.
Yeah.
And I don't get it. And also, I kind of put this to Kev Roberts last week, but like, the feeling is, well, especially when I was playing towards the end of my grade career, it's just like he single-handedly fucked grade cricket by implementing the under-23 system.
Single-handedly fucked grade cricket.
In terms of like, well, he stopped people being, over the age of 23. Yeah. If you're not playing first grade 23 and you're not in those squads, well, then just like, what's the point of him playing? And that's kind of changed.
Well, they're trying to change that now, aren't they? I remember going, my dad actually told me to go and get Greg Chappell's autograph at the SCG.
So did mine.
Yeah, it was like 1997. There was like this kind of graying guy in his 50s just alone with a crossword in the SCG members bar. And dad said, that's Greg Chappell, go and get his autograph. And I like gingerly walked over, like, hello, Mr. Chappell, and presented my... I think it was just like a piece of paper, and he like, wiped his mouth and signed it and said nothing to me. Then it was just a really thoroughly unenjoyable experience.
See, maybe this is the same thing, though. It's like, our kids, your kids especially, just being like, you see Steve Smith in 20 years' time and you go to your kids, it's like, you guys should get Steve
Smith. He was seminal batsman. He
was a bit leg side, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He moved
around
the crease a lot.
Yeah. Mark Waugh would have hated him.
He looked weird.
Greg Chappell didn't look weird.
To be fair to Mr. Chappell, and that's what my dad told me to call him back in the day when I got his autograph, he did give his time to talk about it, which is something I didn't expect. Mm. Totally agree with you. He goes, I think a lot of people hold him and his ideas responsible for, taking the quality of player and the older player out of a lot of the junior cons, a lot of the grade cricket stuff and a lot of the Sheffield Shield stuff. And I wondered if it like harked back to his time playing county cricket in the 70s when there was a lot of like older guys coming through and taking up spots as well. But, some of those older guys, they provide the opposition, someone like Cameron White makes Australian cricket better because even if he doesn't make the Australian side, and many people say that he should, even if he doesn't make it, you still got to overcome him to make the Australian side. You shouldn't be in the Australian side unless you can dislodge Cameron White from it. You shouldn't be in the Australian side unless you can get Cameron White out. But now Shield is a little bit more.
Still Cameron White, you're just there, like you're like the boss on like you have to get past Cameron White to get into the Australian team.
It's Bowser then Cameron White. there's, as ever, this time of year, our favourite time of year, because it's the Shield bat off. Yeah, we're all batting off for places.
Yes.
That's poorly phrased.
All batting off.
But sure, Marsh has just scored 150 not out.
He always scores 100 right before we record on a podcast, I
think. Yeah, it's a consistent thing. So he's in.
Yeah. He's great. You see, he's 100 in the ODI. Looked amazing. Just cash in.
He's one of Australia's best batsmen. Yeah. But there's some comments on social media, my favourite place to go when I'm trying to, you know, reach out to the experts. And it's just like, nah, I don't like it when this guy scores a run. Someone else.
He's wronged us too many times. Too many times he's done this, you know. Hit runs at fortuitous times right before test series and then earn his spot deservedly.
It's the Watson review joke, Sean Marsh. You give yourself away as someone who's really not quite on the money if you're sort of still running the Marsh gags. You know?
I think there's just one batting place left, I think is what's going to happen, because it'll be Usman Khawaja, Finch, I'd say, Sean Marsh, Mitch Marsh will play cricket for Australia
as
well.
He won't bat four.
He won't bat four. I wasn't going in order. Travis Head will probably play. Mm. And then there's one, it won't be Labuschagne, he'll get dropped. And then the bowlers and the wicketkeepers saw themselves out. So
there's a spot. Hanscom.
Yeah, you want Hanscom?
I want him, and I think it will be him. The reverse of that could, I think Marcus Harris is the other guy in with a shot to open the batting. Mm-hmm. It's funny we haven't mentioned Renshaw. He just seems to be strangely on the nose. He made no runs against the New South Wales attack who had the test players back. Mm. But Harris could open with Finch, Khawaja could go to three and then it all sort of slides down from there. So then we'll go Marsh, Head, Marsh. Mm. Yeah.
Did you guys catch Virat Kohli's comments about him not needing to sledge? So it's just everyone's lying at the moment.
Yeah.
Because India are going to have an 18-year-old opening batsman, Prithvi Shaw. And then there's obviously Virat Kohli, probably the most hated cricketer in Australia, from what I understand, for good reason. Mm. But and then Kohli, obviously deliberately antagonistic. He's saying I don't need to sledge. Everyone's lying to us because it's going to happen, and it's okay.
I just think it's a feast for these captains. I can just imagine Kohli and Faf on the phone just having a wonderful laugh at just the absolute state of Australian cricket at the moment. And there's no way in the world they would believe that within the Australian spirit exists this really timid kind of quiet actions louder than words approach. You know, it'll only take a couple of bad innings, I would say. I was going to say losses, but bad innings for calls for a more aggressive Australia to come back. I mean, you can see, you can hear Shane Warne saying it over the TV commentary now. His body language is wrong. There's got to be more intent. You've got to get at the batsman. That'll come.
There is a small but very loud minority of people leading that. It's much like, you know, the far right insurgency in Australian politics right now. There's your first political, pathetically tortured metaphor.
Torturous.
Bingo. Edo's, let me put it to you. Australia lose the first test match in Adelaide within 3 days. How quickly will the cries for Bancroft, Smith and Warner be made available again? How loud will those cries become?
They'll be loud. You'll hear them over the Nullarbor. Is the Nullarbor anyway? I don't know where the Nullarbor is. Yeah. I think it'll be loud, mate. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of talk at the moment at board level about getting him into the Shield squad and then quickly shoehorn them into the Australian squad. It could happen very quickly, couldn't it? Or could it? Regardless, I think, you know, if we get absolutely wiped in the first test in Adelaide, in 3 days, less, wow. I'll be leading those calls.
Okay, well, in the meantime, as I said earlier at the top of the show, England beat Sri Lanka. Unbelievable test match. And, geez, England are looking really, really good. I mean, they played three spinners. Jack Leach, who looks like a 1920s criminal. He took 5 wickets in the 4th innings. Moeen Ali took 4 from the... they just spun Sri Lanka out. And
How many players they have? I feel like we're always mentioning new players on the show.
They love a new player.
They're so flexible, too. They're mix and match. They're three keepers, couple of all-rounders. Guys can interchange everywhere. Moeen Ali will bat 9 or he'll bat 3.
Or else we must be identified by our batting position.
That's right. We are 6 batsmen, a keeper, 4 bowlers.
Yeah. Forever.
And we're still looking for Flintoff 05.
Yep.
So Moeen Ali now is 8 wickets away from going past Monty Panesar in test match wickets. They got about 150-something, 160-something. Right. That's amazing, isn't it?
Is it?
Well, yeah. This podcast is fast becoming English cricket appreciation podcast. But
they're good.
And I'm all for it. Yeah.
They seem to be good.
Okay, well, women's T20, Australia had a tactical loss in the semi. They'll play in the semi-final for the winner of England, the West Indies. Pez, you were saying before that they are playing as we are recording.
Just as we're recording, so we haven't quite got the result, but the one of the end results will be that each of India, England, and Australia will be contesting the semi-finals. But I'm not sure of the fourth, but who's playing whom is based on that result.
Should we be making more of this?
Yes.
Not just
Cricket
us,
Australia should
media.
Be making more of it. Yeah. I mean, the women's team are just the absolute embodiment of everything that we want in sport.
A good story to tell.
A really good story to tell.
I reckon there's a rise of women's sport in Australia in terms of specifically the football team, i.e. soccer, and the cricket team doing so well at the moment. Like, there's like a real groundswell for like support. There was Australia playing Chile in the football the other night. Packed house. Like, it's fantastic. It's brilliant. More of it? Australia needs to win. Australia needs to win something.
We turn on the TV and see how good the netball's going as well. Massive atmosphere, great skills, and they just play like without the arse hattery of the men.
Without the arse hattery of the men. Speaking of arse hattery, there's a new Big Bash game out on PlayStation. Pez, I know as a 33-year-old man, you're looking forward to playing this.
No, I saw this right, and people think, oh, this is a Cricket Australia message. It's not. Like, I was just drawn to this still image of Pat Cummins with a massive head.
Yeah, it's bobblehead.
On a really small body. So Cricket Australia have released some like BBL arcade game called Big Bash Boom, and like obviously it's targeted at children and has graphic overlays and stuff that is meant to kind of bring kids into sport, into cricket. And like it is amazing, the sense that you go, like, it takes a lot of creativity to look at a game called like cricket and go, like, I can make this cool. And like they still keep trying to do it with the Big Bash.
Yeah.
It got me thinking about cricket video games, and we've talked about it before. Yeah. I think Channel 7, hell of a network, ran a competition on social the other day.
Yeah.
Play, like with a round robin. Oh, yeah. No, like,
brackets. American style brackets.
Yeah, a knockout playoff as to which was the greatest cricket video game ever. Like, Adam Collins wanted to start a campaign about it.
Right, obviously getting paid per post.
Yeah, exactly.
Who won that?
I can't remember who won.
Stick cricket was in the final, but they lost to Ricky Ponting cricket's X year.
But yeah. Ricky Ponting cricket was just a white label product. They put different names to it, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because my favourite cricket game is Shane Warne Cricket 99.
Why is that better than Brian Lara?
Which in the UK was Brian Lara Cricket 99.
It shows you, right? Like for me, and I believe you too, Dave, was like Cricket 96.
96, you got it in the Weet-Bix box. You paid $5 and sent it off in the mail and you got it back as a CD-ROM, and it was fantastic. Just two commentators talking about the alimony
checks. Yeah, those are just overt references to divorced wives, which is really quite like an accurate reflection of that day and age and men.
Jay Tisglev was a really slow runner.
He always subbed him out.
But he averaged 60. I always saw him as like Alan Border's proxy.
That's right. Subbed him in for R. Connor and G. Island to a far quicker than that. But I mean, you know, we've talked about this before, but like they've got to do like a prestige cricket video game, don't they? And there's a lot of talk about like Red Dead Redemption 2 coming out. Like, I'm not a gamer by any stretch, but like there's some really high quality graphics with a lot of wonderful gameplay. And it just starts getting you thinking about grade cricket, like career mode, you know? And imagine how good it'll be, like the highest end graphics, home late at night, your wife or your partner's out whatever, and you get to just have a game at home and you've got to go through the nets, you've got to go through the showers, you've got to deal with the politics.
Great cricket, but it's like a shoot it up, like Doom. Like a crossover, and then just go home and like shoot everyone.
Yeah. No, I love this idea, Pez, where you could have like this kind of like Grand Theft Auto, Red Dead Redemption, just like open worlds. Like you go out for a circuit on the Friday night, you drink too much, you
in love with someone else playing in like India or something.
Like talking over the thing. Like you have
a bad net, burn the nets down.
Yeah.
When you get good, you get the opportunity to look over people's shoulders as well. Like, do you choose to do that?
Yeah.
Choose your own adventure.
Yeah. Choose your own adventure.
Great cricket all the way to test match level.
Yeah. Beating the game is easy. You quit.
Yeah.
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 Match fixing, hypotheticals, stuff like that. Be great.
Match fixing, car parks, McDonald's.
I'd buy the shit out of that game.
Imagine like Leisure Suit Larry meets cricket.
Leisure Suit Larry. What an amazing
reference. Congregating outside a brothel.
Should we talk at all about our experience going to Jollymont last week? Is that a bit self-indulgent? I don't know. We've
dialed up the indulgence a lot on this show, but let's do it.
Okay, for me personally, because I'm not a comms guy. Pez, you previously had another life working in comms, so I was not used to it. But like, I just found the whole thing a little bit. It was weird. Like, everyone was being so nice, but it was like, I don't know. I'm not used to people being nice. Is that what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I think especially
Australian men. And the comms guy was really, really nice.
He was really nice. Yeah.
Facilitated.
But it was like going out of your way to be like, oh, Kev Roberts is a really nice guy.
Yeah.
And I just he was nice, but let me figure it out. You know.
Yeah. It was like lifting the curtain a little bit when we get guests for the show. Just before we start, like most of the time when we make contact with them. It's a very quick exchange of conversation via text or it's very rarely on the phone. And people normally go, yeah, that's great. And we just sort out a time and we call them sort of 5 minutes ahead of the show and just exchange a very
hope
quick
that they pick up.
Hello. Yeah. Hope they pick up, obviously leave voice messages if they don't, text furiously. But when they do pick up, we say hello, quick exchange. And we always ask them, is there anything on limits or off limits? And that doesn't necessarily mean we won't ask them off limits things, just keen to know, in case. And like, almost to a guest, everyone, you know, all the way through to Steve Waugh and stuff, just says like, nah, whatever, which is surprising as a comms person. Kev Roberts was probably the one with a little bit more going on behind the scenes, but it wasn't too hard. I think it just a few of his comms people gave us a few stories to possibly interrogate, which we didn't at all, apart from being timed out. And then there was a few people in the room when we talked, but they were unobtrusive and ultimately, like, you know, they've been called arrogant and controlling and all that sort of stuff, but like, they were very helpful with us. They opened their doors to the boardroom. They got back to us really quickly with it. They followed up, you know.
And then they also let us stay there for an hour while we sorted out audio problems.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's what everybody does now with the great cricketer.
I don't know. Maybe no one else will find that interesting. I don't know. I just found the whole experience.
We can cut it out
because
it's the end of the segment.
Yeah, that's true.
Just sledge us online. I mean, it's starting to happen anyway. So.
Perfect. All right. Well, you know who's coming up next? Usman Khawaja.
Eddos, he goes. Well, here we are. We've wanted this guest for a very, very long time for various reasons that we will explore as we chat. Let me do the numbers. 34 tests, 7 tons, 13 50s, averaging 45-ish, about 2,500 runs at that level. 113 first-class matches, 21 tons, 39 50s, nearly 8,000 runs there, averaging 45-ish. Befitting the Australian stereotype, he doesn't drink, doesn't sledge, has outstanding wrists and can very evidently play good cricket in Asia and the Middle East. They call him Uzi, or as Wikipedia alleges, smooth. He calls himself an Australian cricket player, PLAYA, on Instagram. We've all played against him and there's absolutely no chance he remembers any of us. Welcome to the Great Cricketer Podcast, Usman Khawaja.
How you going? Well, you've all played against me. I don't believe it.
No, we did. You remember us. Look, Uzi, and I hope I can call you Uzi, I normally start by asking about grade cricket, but the nation is in crisis, so I'm compelled to commence with what's most important. Please tell us your injury is good, that you'll play in the first test and cover the systemic batting flaws in this country by piling on bulk runs out of the shadow of Smith and Warner. But seriously, how's your injury?
It's going really well, thanks. I've been running, hitting. I'm hitting against bowlers first time tomorrow. Sort of ran between the wickets at full pace on Friday the other day. I felt really good. I'm pretty confident I'll be right to play in that Sheffield Shield match. And all things going well, if I get through that, then, I'll be involved with selection. So at the moment, I'm really happy with how things are going.
Well, that's a relief. Mate, okay, let's talk about grade cricket. What's your relationship to it, mate? I mean, what does it mean to you?
Yeah, in all honesty, I love great cricket, but I only love it because I like playing with the guys at the club. I think if I went to a club and, I don't know, maybe in a few years if some of the guys I play with sort of left the club, it would be a bit harder. But when I was obviously growing up in Sydney, I had a lot of good mates playing for Randwick Petersham. And I love playing coming back to great cricket and just throwing around bands with them. And then the same thing with my club here in Queensland Valleys. I've got a few really good mates. Luke Feldman's there too, and Jack Wildermuth and Mark Cicchetti from Queensland there too. So even just the club cricketers in first grade, I've got to be honest, I don't know too many of the lower grade guys in the Valleys. So but I do really enjoy coming back to the first grade boys and playing them. It's really, it's a different sort of mindset too. You can sort of just relax and you don't have any cameras around. You can just go back to just playing cricket, which I love doing.
Well, great cricket. You were actually playing at the age of 14 and first grade by 16, nearly 17, I think. So can you just, cast your mind back and tell us a little bit about those formative grade days playing with and against grown men, as a designated player of promise and obviously dominating grown men at that. That must have been thrilling.
I remember when I first came to first grade, I was kind of shitting myself because you never feel like you're actually ready. So I remember when I first got my game, I think it was against Western Suburbs, it was at Goodyear Oval. I think I scored about 8 and I think I tried to flick like a full toss and went straight to mid-on. And I was like, oh boy, this is a bad start. And I was, at the time, you always want to make a name, make a mark. And at that time, we had a lot of older players that were playing great cricket too, playing at the Mossman, people like Phil Alley, Warwick Adlam, guys that played for New South Wales, been around it. And we played, I remember when I was that first year playing against Fairfield, and Fairfield had their full string attack, and included Dougie Bollinger, Don Nash, Grant Lambert, and Anthony Clark was there too, all guys who played, you know, New South Wales, played high level cricket for a long time. And honestly, remember just being so nervous the night before. I was thinking, oh boy, what's going on? And I was like, probably put myself in a real bad position, because first of all, I came out, Donnie Nash blew my front toe off, so back to the pavilion for me. So, but it was those experiences that sort of toughened me up, I guess, and that sort of respect playing against these guys, especially in Sydney first grade, because the time was so strong and so cutthroat. I did have some really good performances in and around there, but it took me a good 2 or 3 years to start getting proper consistency.
Ozzy, I just want to know, obviously you've played now Brisbane grade cricket and also Sydney Test cricket. So I wonder, like, how much worse is Brisbane grade cricket? And are you batting in your Australian lid when you go back to grade cricket
Sydney
now?
Sydney Test cricket?
Yeah, of course. That's what it is. Yeah.
Look, I'm going to judge it by when I first came out, because I obviously haven't played Sydney grade, or Sydney Test cricket, as you call it, the last 5-6 years. So when I first came up, I thought the standard of Brisbane first grade cricket was really good. I thought, without sounding too harsh, I thought in every team there was six guys you think could be playing first grade back home in Sydney, and then there might have been two or three guys that might have been playing more sort of second grade cricket around there, probably a bit more 7, 3 and 4, whatever. But yeah, it wasn't as strong as Sydney, and that's just me being honest. The worst part about it was the first game when I was playing for Valleys, it was at Western Suburbs against them, and we played the whole day, and had the lunch. I schnicked off early, I think. So you schnick off early. What happens when you schnick off early? You're literally just hanging for tea, right? You're just waiting for the tea break, and about to trounce some afternoon tea, and wondering what their pipelets or whatever's around. And I get to afternoon tea, and I'm like so excited, like, oh, I'm going to take this down. And I walk over to the afternoon, and there's no afternoon tea. In Queensland, first grade cricket, they don't do any afternoon tea.
What?
Does not provide afternoon tea. I was absolutely
scandalous, Usman.
I thought it might have been upstairs. I'm like, boy, where's the afternoon tea? I'm like, what afternoon tea?
Oh.
That almost broke me. No words.
Tax tags immediately.
I'm going back to New South Wales.
Okay, that's a Fox News story.
Yep.
Usman's going back to New South Wales.
Yep.
it's really interesting with you, Usman, because there's so much chat about the identity of the Australian cricket team at the moment, and you're telling us about your experiences of playing first grade and it being very cutthroat and stuff like that. And I referred sort of jokingly earlier, to you as someone who kind of doesn't drink and doesn't sledge. And in so many ways, you sort of cut against the grain of the Aussie cricketer that we've, kind of grown up with. And you wrote about that in the Player's Voice a little bit as well. You know, like what's it taken for you to kind of be yourself in an environment, I think, that is fairly like, that wants you to be a certain type of person?
I think we've come a long way over the last 10 years, even, the way the Aussie team is now has come a long way. You know, when I first started playing first grade, it was 2005, over 10 years ago, 13 years ago, we had some really old heads around, and one of my guys that was really close to was Richard Cheekwe at Randwick, and he'd obviously played a lot of cricket a long time, and there's a lot of old guys around him, and at the end of the day, it was a bit weird because at the end of the day, I wouldn't have a drink. They'd always ask me every time, and I get, the more drinks they'd have, the pushier they get. But it was just one of those things that, I wasn't going to do. I was going to stay pretty strong on. After a while, they realised that I wasn't going to crack, and they were really good about it. They were always joking about it. My teammates have been absolutely great. I think moving up the ranks, it was odd. I stuck out a little bit, the only sober guy around. I think, funnily enough, maybe as the game gets more professional and the younger guys are coming up, there's a few guys now that actually don't drink a lot. And they have no religious reasons to not drink. They just choose not to do it. So it happens a bit more now than it used to. I think the game has changed a little bit in that respect.
Mm.
Usman, let's just quickly fast forward. Let's dive deep into it. Your test career, your debut 2011 against England, you hit what is now regarded as the greatest 37 ever.
40-odd.
I think you were on 15 after eight balls, which is just unheard of. Obviously, you thought, wow, test cricket is really easy. But, you know, there's nothing that waters the appetite than a good-looking 30-odd. Do you think that innings gave people very, very high expectations of what you could achieve? Or was it just another good-looking
30-odd? Good-looking 30, something like good-looking 30, you're right. I don't know. Look, at the time, we hadn't really played very well that test series, so I think the public and the media in general were, you know, at that time, were looking for something. That 37, you know,
spoke
was it,
to us,
I guess, to be honest, it was kind of embarrassing and weird at the same time. Like, I got 37 and I've got all these people kind of like coming up to me, oh, what a great innings, well done, whatnot. And I was like, no, man, I made 37. How good is this? Imagine if I make a 50. I was like, at the time, I didn't quite understand what was going on. But, you know, I came back down to reality pretty quick. I played the next two test matches and then was dropped again after that. So it was all a learning experience at that time.
Well, don't forget as well, you got 21 in the second innings as well. So a 37 and 21 that changed the world is a documentary coming out on Amazon Prime later this month.
I still think about it.
Yeah, in the shower mostly. I want to ask you, like, do you get the sense that there's a bit of a batting crisis in Australian cricket? I mean, obviously, with three top line batsmen unavailable to play, there's a lot more pressure on guys like yourself. I mean, do you sense though around the country that there's not enough runs being scored from Australian batsmen?
We're not playing as well as we should right now. Crisis is a strong word, but you got to remember, I guess, two of our top batsmen. Are not there right now. Test cricket, you lose two of your top batsmen. It's like India losing, Virat Kohli or Jinka Rahane at the same time. It's going to leave a big hole in their team to fill. I mean, you potentially, if you take out guys like them who are averaging 60 and 50, you've taken out 110 runs every innings. Mm. You know, it doesn't work out like that exactly all the time, but that's what you've taken out. You've taken out over 200 runs a game. And to replicate that and replace that, it's very hard. And these guys haven't become the players they are overnight. It just hasn't happened. They've played a lot of cricket over a long time and done well over a long time. So the guys coming in, it's not about, we're in crisis. Test match cricket is not easy. It's not, you can't just come in all the time and just score. It doesn't happen. Didn't happen for me. I can speak from experience. It's actually quite hard coming into that environment. The cricket itself, I honestly don't find the cricket itself too dissimilar from our first class system. Our first class system is still very strong. But just everything else that goes around with it. It's just the media hype and all that other fluff that comes with playing test match cricket. And that's the hard bit that you have to deal with. So I think crisis is a hard word. I say to everyone, just sit back, just relax, just see what happens. I think we're all in a little bit of a panic at the moment.
We're certainly hoping, Usman, that you can fill that hole with a lot of runs. But can I just ask on the batting stuff as well, mate? Like, there's a bit of chat lately because maybe it is media hype that there may be coaching issues at play in relation to Australian batting, that maybe there's a systemic issue within it. You know, we've heard a lot of people talking about even the tools and methods that people use in training, whether, coaches are getting appointed because they're really good with like the dog stick or the wanger, or something like that, or guys are having throwdowns for too long, or bowlers can't bowl long enough at them, or, some of our best batting coaches aren't really getting a gig. Rather than getting you to comment exactly on that, like, How important are batting coaches to you personally? Do you use them a lot, or are you fairly certain in your own game?
To me personally, no. I've never been big on personally on batting coaches. I've been big on me being my own best coach, learning what works for me. Even nowadays, I don't do too much work with really any batting coaches, really. I mean, I do a little bit of work with, whoever's weighing to me. I'll chat about a little bits here and there with, Justin Langer or Graham Hick and whatnot, but I won't get too involved in either way because I know what I'm trying to work on after playing 7 years of cricket, when things are going bad, you try to simplify things. When things are going good, you try and do the same thing. You're simplifying, just playing the game. Personally, for me, I've never been one to rely too much on batting coaching. That's mostly because, you know, a lot of times you're in and out of, you know, teams. You're going from Australian team to, you know, the Sheffield Shield Bulls team and then back to Grey Cricket, and you're always floating around. So you need, you know, a coach is not always there to see what's happening, what's going on. You're always there. You're in control of your own destination. And as a player, you need to take ownership of that. And you know, people can tell you what to do and how to do it. But at the end of the day, you've got to do it. It's your career. It's going to affect you no matter what happens in this game. It's going to affect you. You know, I've playing reverse sweeps and UAE, and I know for a fact that all the coaches wouldn't have, been hand in mouth, sort of, oh my God, what are you doing playing reverse sweep? Sort of in that first thing. I heard some of the boys joking around about it. The coaches being like, oh boy, what's he doing? That, you know, that, I wasn't going to let anyone else dictate how I play, because at the end of the day, you've got to take ownership, because if I don't score runs for a while and I do get dropped, it's going to come back on me. You know, I'm not going to point out, oh, the coach told me to do this, or it's his fault. It's not me. So, I take responsibility for how I'm going to bat and how I'm going to do things, and I think that's the best way to, for myself to kind of approach it.
Going back to the UAE, which you just mentioned, Usman, I mean, that was a bit of a breakthrough for you. I guess, you know, especially with Warner and Smith out of the equation, you're now seen, I guess, as Australia's premier top-order batsman. How does that sit with you, and just your own personal reflections on that tour?
Yeah, look, I just go out there, and all honesty, I'm not even taking piss. I just go out there and try to have fun. This doesn't last forever, whether I'm playing great cricket or for the Bulls or for Australia. Like, it's hard. I know it's hard. It's just no cricket. So you're like, you know, it's top pinnacle. There's a lot of pressure on it. You've got to enjoy what you're doing. You've got to try to figure out a way of enjoying it. If you're not, I personally, I found if I can't find that enjoyment, I'm not playing my best cricket. I don't want to play cricket if I'm not enjoying it. So for me, that's the number one factor. And you're obviously always enjoying it when you're scoring runs and, you know, when you're winning games and stuff. It's always more enjoyable. But at the end of the day, that's probably the key. And when I went over sort of to the UAE and preparation and everything was happening there, obviously been through the ups and downs of subcontinent. And I never played a game in India. I felt like all I needed was an opportunity, and I knew in the back of my head I had two games in UAE, and, you know, I was going to do everything that I planned to do and play, and if I did that well and I scored runs, you know, that'd be awesome. But at the end of the day, it wasn't the end of the world if I didn't either, because I knew I did everything up to that point, you know, to be in a good place and to try to score runs. And I guess that's all you can do. It's a big cliche, control the controllables. You try to do anything else, this game is a funny way of coming back and biting you in the ass, whether you're playing Sydney Test cricket or you're playing Test cricket.
I want to know, obviously, the South African tour gone by, it's still you know, long in the minds of the Australian cricketing public, and there was sort of no winners there from the tour as a whole, I suppose, apart from the world who got to see Faf du Plessis walk out of the Durban dressing rooms in a towel. But can you sort of describe?
He's got a good rig, doesn't he?
Oh, it's a gorgeous rig, Usman. I could lax the rig or wax the rig, or even if I get my words.
That's my wife. She's following you on Instagram and everything. Seeing, you know, you can feel the likes pop up. I see the likes pop up.
How does that make you feel?
Yeah, just so you got to watch that faff slide into those DMs. That's all I got to say. I just want to know, like, you know, how much, you know, what sort of happened, you know, hurt the team, you know, after Cape Town especially. And do you sort of keep in contact with Dave Warner and Steve Smith? Are you still sort of talking to them?
Yeah, I still am. Here and there, just send texts and just normal, nothing out of the order. Just, yeah, how you going? And I just sent me a text after the 100 UAE, and I keep in contact with Davey, just saying g'day and our family and all that sort of just normal chat. Even had a couple of conversations, not recently, but you know, a few months ago with Bangers and whatnot. I think they're all sort of doing their own thing and in a good space. But, you know, I don't think the public realises how hard it is to be in their position at the moment. I think, you know, the way, you know, they I know what it's like from an injury point of view when I've done my ACL and not being able to play for a considerable amount of time, like 8 months, and they're probably about 8-9 months now, and it just kills you if you just want to get out there and get amongst them. And
you know, everything else that goes with the financial pressure out there, everything else. And unfortunately, they can go out and play T20 cricket around the world under that respect. But, you know, it was a very tough tour. Luckily, when the tour finished, I could get my mind away from it. I got married 2 days after, or a day after, actually, the day after I got back from the South African tour. So for me, it was a way of getting away from it a little bit because it was mentally a very tough tour, and I found it very mentally tough, especially after the Ashes. And I didn't think the Ashes would be so draining. And it was when the Ashes finished, I just felt so tired.
Yeah.
Fatigued and everything that's gone on over the 5 test match period, I can't really explain to anyone unless you go through it what it feels like. But it's just a mental fatigue. You just sort of like, oh boy, that's over, okay. And then we sort of had to just sort of try to push that aside and just get ready for South Africa again. Yeah. It was very tough. You know, people might say, you guys are meant to do this or whatnot, but we're not machines. We're human like anyone else, and we do our best in the circumstances we have.
Yeah.
Oh, just so sensible. Usman, we'll move on to the throwdowns component of our podcast, which I'm sure you know extremely well because you'd listen to every show. So don't worry about it if you think the question's silly. But so I'll kick it off. Usman, from all reports, you're an avid basketball fan with numerous references on your Instagram to things like questionable travels in the NBL, your wife Rachel's handles, and of course you've named your dog LeBron. I just want to know, who is the NBL or NBA equivalent to Usman Khawaja, the cricketer, Blake Griffin, Russell Westbrook, Kyrie, or a latter-day Andrew Vlahov?
Oh, that's a good one. I'm not sure. Russell Westbrook's my favorite player, but I don't think I got anything on Russell. NBA equivalent. Oh, well, you put me in a thick one here. No idea. I have absolutely no idea. I can't think of a Pakistani NBA player.
Changing tack slightly here. Usman, during a one-dayer in New Zealand a few years back, cameras caught you gently fondling teammate Adam Zampa's buttocks as you stood arm-in-arm for the national anthem. How did you recently married. How did your now wife react to this public display of homoerotic affection?
I don't think she was surprised. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or not. She knows I'm good mates with Adam. Maybe she didn't realise how good mates I was.
He's got a great Instagram account.
Very good manicured. All right, Usman, I'll be the first person to do this one. But I played against you in a CHS versus CAS game in 2004, and I've dined out on this occurrence for the better part of 14 years with a tangible increase of our friendship at dinner parties whenever you hit runs, peaking in the last month or so when I basically told everyone that I spoke at your wedding after you heroically batted out for a draw in the UAE just recently. Do you do the same thing with your friends and family whenever a great cricketer tweet gets over 150 retweets?
Look, I find nothing better than seeing a hilarious tweet from the great cricketer.
Yes.
There was one from a while ago. It might have been the one where it's like, I'm pretty sure you guys retweeted it. It was one where it's like the guy, he's in the office and he's trying to laugh at, you know, when you're at point and the slips make a joke and he's like 10 meters away just laughing at one of their jokes. I thought that was so funny. I'm like that at Gully sometimes. I'm like kind of listening to them in the slips if I'm not in the slips. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it's pretty fun. I'm doing the same thing. The stuff you come out with, it's actually, you know, honestly, like, it doesn't matter whether you're a test cricketer or whatever, everyone goes through the same things. You know, everyone's been through the whole great cricket aspect of it, and you know, just bring a bit of fun in that.
That's very kind.
Thanks, mate. Thank you very much, Usman. Usman, back in 2006, I played a T20 match for North against Randwick Petersham against you at North Sydney Oval. In my innings of 16 runs, I hit a cover drive that sizzled through your hands into the boundary, and later you laughed and magnanimously said I'd nearly broken your finger. It was the highest praise I've ever received in cricket. Anyway, my name is Sam Perry, and I'm just keen to know if you remember me or my name from cricket at all.
I'm not even sure if you guys are being serious right now. Is this genuine or are you taking the piss out of me?
It is genuine.
Genuinely hit a cup. Where were we playing?
North Sydney Oval. Yeah. It was the end of the game. You were very nice about it.
I was. I must have been won. Pretty, yeah, I don't know. North Sydney Oval is not a big ground, so it wouldn't take them long to go to the fence.
many runs you scored? Did you say 16?
Well, interestingly, actually, I can't remember how many I scored, but I hit three boundaries and then our four boundaries, and then our manager came in and said I made 10 afterwards. So I don't think the scoring was bang on, but I remember that I hit four boundaries. Anyway, I think this bit is done now.
was this first grade cricket or what?
Yes.
It was.
That's the point of this.
Sorry, Sammy, yeah. I don't remember that, mate.
Yes, that's the soundbite.
Yeah, it's a soundbite.
Usman, just to complete the trilogy of references, completely self-serving, I played against you in a Poitevin Grey under-21 match between North Sydney and Randwick Petersham at Coogee Oval, and I dismissed you.
What's your name, sorry?
That's the soundbite. I can't tell you my name. D. Edwards.
You're one of those guys I talk about. Like I'm out somewhere, or you know, having a game in the restaurant or at the pub having drinks, and I'm sitting with my Diet Coke, and some guy comes, like, "Oh, hey," I'm like, "Hey, mate, how you doing?" He's like,
"Well, mate,
when I got you out that one game when we were 11 and you were playing at this ground, and you," and I'm like, "Oh yeah, I remember that." He's like, "Oh yeah, that was me." I'm like, "Oh yeah, yeah, good ball, mate. Well done. That's mate, you. You're that guy."
It was a good ball. I actually bumped you, and you were out.
You did not bump me out. Now I know you're lying.
Not only did I bump you, and then you were out caught on the boundary, really far out. It was a really amazing catch, actually. But then I went on to hit a chanceless 47 not out and won the game for a really average North Sydney Poitevin Grey team.
I probably don't. You know what? My first 3 or 4 years in Poitevin Grey were absolutely stinker. So probably
yeah, I was in a wine haze for most of it myself.
I was like the one guy who was actually sober the whole time playing. Yeah. Remembers
absolutely everything.
All right, Usman, would you say that celebrating with a dab after scoring 50 against Pakistan at the SCG, or the size of your baby G watch on the field, has brought the game into more disrepute?
It's not a baby G, man. It's an IWC. It's a big difference.
No, sponsor
yeah,
branding.
Look, I think the dab was. I think it wasn't the thing that I honestly hadn't planned it. Like I got a 50. It was the last innings of the summer. Mm. It just felt right. And yeah. we've been dabbing around everywhere, like in the vans and whatever with the boys. And it just felt it. I just felt it. Look, I got a bit of stick for it, but hate is going to hate. So,
Usman, we talk a lot about what it takes to gain real, tangible, meaningful acceptance in Australian cricket. The one must conform to a number of hidden rules and conventions that span the social, political, sometimes even economic realm. In the wake of your recent and well-publicised weight loss, would I be right in saying all of this can be circumvented if you just get a good rig? Or did you just do it after seeing Faf in a towel in Durban?
Yeah, I've got a photo of Faf on my wall. Something to aspire to. It's just every day I'm just looking at it, I'm just doing more bicep curls.
Usman, I think this could be the last one, but you were on the receiving end of one of the worst DRS decisions in history when you were given out caught behind off the bowling of Graham Swan in 2013 at Old Trafford. You might remember that two tests earlier at Trent Bridge, Stuart Broad nicked a ball to mid-on and was given not out, all part of an otherwise great 2013 Ashes series. Is this proof that technology cannot be trusted? And what are your thoughts on global warming?
I think technology it works more times than not if you use it correctly. It sometimes sucks when you get given not out and you're like, oh, don't refer it. And right at the last minute, the bugger's referring. You're like, oh, God, yeah. And literally that happened to me in the first test at Durban. I tried to, like, reverse sweep one and I gloved it straight up and I honestly thought I got away from it. That actually kills you because you think you've gotten away with it. I'd be giving you not out. Mm. In the grade game, that's not out, but not Test match cricket.
Yeah,
and then you just think, yeah, we've got to all do our part for global warming. I'm probably not doing my part driving a V8, but I do other bits and pieces, which I'm hopefully helping.
Fantastic. Thanks for that wide-ranging conversation, Usman, taking us all the way from Coogee Oval through to the UAE, Baby G watches being mistaken as well, and dabbing. We really thank you for enduring this and wishing you all the best for this summer, all the best with your injury, and please score a host of runs to save this nation's cricket summer.
Cheers, boys. Thanks for the conversation.
lads, we've been accused of being defensive about any commercial introduction into this show, and that's an accurate accusation.
We were
definitely. I mean, I'm defensive about it, but we're going to keep doing it. So back off. our first ever sponsor last year was Budgie Smuggler, which we believe there is, you know, there's a lot of symbiosis between cricket and Budgie Smugglers.
Yeah, definitely.
What we said last year was, you know, Budgie Smuggler, be the most alpha version of yourself as possible. They've come back to us this year and they've said, listen, boys, and they've said it like Brendan Julian, boys, they're designing, they're doing custom smugglers. So you can make your own design, give it to them, and they will do that design up and come back with it. And they're focusing in on club teams. So for example, my old team, North Sydney Cricket Club, part of their players group, which essentially informs the entirety of our comedy, they are currently debating their actual designs. They're getting red and black, whatever. But the major talking point with them is whether the logo goes on the back of the smuggler or the front over the head of the penis if it's a man. I just think, you know, this is something that, you know, a lot of clubs may want to do. They may want to smuggle together.
I reckon that's red hot, Pez. Yeah. I like that. I like the idea of having like custom, like everyone uniformed. You have to turn up. If you turn up in the wrong training kit, for instance, like it's changed a little bit. Everyone's got to be uniform. It's all very North Korea these days. Great cricket is North Korea, is what I'm saying.
Do you find like sports people tend to wear a lot of Budgie Smugglers as well? Like a lot of that swimwear. It's next level elite kind of wear.
Strong. It's alpha. It is alpha.
Yeah.
Strong penetration with the athlete community, Budgie Smugglers, I believe.
And your box would sit against would sit much more snugly with Budgie Smugglers. But I guess the question you'd have with the custom smugglers is post-match tubbing scenarios.
Yeah. Right.
I guess there'd be the temptation, if you weren't sure about it, to shower in your smugglers. Do you think that would be more accepted than the person who sort of does it in shorts or their whites?
I don't think so.
Whites?
No, I think you can probably ditch the smugglers and just hang them up on the shower. You know, just get the brand out there either way, get the logo out there.
Well, as we know, Max Alpha Aid gives you the extra inches that you so desperately crave for the post-match showers. So kind of mixing...
Another crossover,
yeah.
Well, anyway, the people at Budgie Smuggler are doing these these smugglers. And you can go to budgiesmuggler.com.au for custom smugglers. That's budgiesmuggler.com.au for your club custom smugglers.
Harry Broad, good morning. You've been reading The Great Cricketer.
But most of the book has taken up with proving he isn't good enough. Locker room language is rife and sexual immaturity is rampant. Having sexual relations is called burgling a chop. I'm very disappointed. I thought this should be a great book.
Hashtag AskTGC. This is a final boarding call for anyone who wants to come to our Adelaide and Perth shows. You know where to get the tickets from. I've already said it 55 times, and you know how to use the internet because you're listening to this podcast. Get round us. They're going to be great shows, and everyone's going to be loose because it's going to be directly after the cricket. Adelaide in the Rhino Room, and then Perth, it's going to be at the Wacker. That's going to be awesome, by the way. I'm looking forward to that immensely before we head to Melbourne and Sydney later on, and then Canberra and Brisbane, hopefully, for the Sri Lankan tours. All right, hashtag AskTGC. A couple of good ones here. Tom Hartney kicks us off this week. He says, "Dear TGC, as all your loyal listeners know, the Triple C is the pinnacle in amateur cricket. As an average to poor cricketer, playing in a grade above where I probably deserve to be, a century at the level I'm currently playing at seems a long way off. I understand that the final C must also be acquired from the local nightclub. As I have a girlfriend, this C remains well and truly out of arm's reach. I understand that the Triple C is a mere pipe dream that I'll never realise. However, I wonder if what I achieved on the weekend comes close and could almost be a veterans or relationship version of the Triple C. I made 70, won $300 on the punt during the day, and then circuited with my teammates. Whilst it will always only be a watered-down version of the Triple C, it is certainly the best day in my 29-year existence. If nothing else, with the decline of print media, this could make up for my name not appearing in the paper before I regress back to a series of scratchy performances of scores under 15. Dave, for our not-so-educated listeners, what is the Triple C?
Thank you, he goes, for asking. The Triple C is the circuit century chop combination.
Yeah.
It has to be acquired in that order.
Mm-hmm.
Century circuit chop.
Century circuit chop.
I should get that right. Let me start again. Century circuit chop. Hit the 100. hit the 100, yep. go out on the glorious circuit with your mates, yes. your cricket mates,
yes,
and then somehow acquire some kind of physical relationship with a woman.
Mm.
I don't know about this one, though.
Mm. Well, he's asking, has he done it?
No, I know what he's asking.
Did he also ask within there that... Did he say within there that the chop needed to happen in the local nightclub or the circuit needed to happen there? Because neither of those things are true.
I understand that the final C must also be acquired from the local nightclub.
Acquired as in the object of the chop must be acquired.
Has to be acquired.
Is that true?
And not procured. No, it can come from anywhere.
Yeah, acquired. Yeah. 100% acquisition.
The premise is wrong there. There's a lot more flexibility for that.
Tom's wrong.
Yeah, Tom's wrong. And I don't think the Triple C excludes those who are in relationships. The problem I've got...
Doesn't it?
My problem
is that gambling is... You
kind of get a chop.
Gambling is a big part of Australian cricket culture.
Yes.
And we know that, and it is a scourge on society.
Mm.
And I am speaking really earnestly. No, I just don't think it should be in part of the Triple C, because the Triple C is something of legends.
Yeah, so he's saying he scored 70, he won some money, and then he's got a girlfriend. This isn't even close to a Triple C.
You hit 70.
Yeah.
That's what you did.
Yeah, so stop right there. Okay. Rowan Clark says, gents.
One of the C's. No, you didn't even get
one.
Literally
written in really long for like some long awaited credibility, but you hit 70.
Rowan Clark says, gents, my Ask TGC question is more of a thinly veiled self-indulgent ramble / personal anecdote with a query tacked on to the end in order to justify shoehorning it into the available medium. I'm sure you wouldn't understand this concept. After an interminable time listening to the TGC boys wax lyrical about the Herculean rig of the one and only towel-sporting rig Adonis, the Alpha King Faf, I finally caved and made possibly the most submissive beta move imaginable to the captain of a much-hated opposition team. I typed the phrase Faf du Plessis shirtless into the Google search bar. I spent a few minutes admiring what is admittedly one of the greats of the modern rig scene, and a few choice clicks and scrolls later, I found myself salivating over a sumptuous snap of the holy trinity of Australian cricketing rigs: Andrew Symons, Mitra Johnson and Shane Watson. At this point, I glanced up to find that the name of the page I was on was titled Hottest Male Cricketers, Topless, at which point the true extent of my actions dawned upon me, and I promptly closed the window before anyone could notice my secret shame. My question is this. Would you first, when you first began your work on TGC, is this the effect you envisage you would have on the cricketing psyche of the nation, and are you proud of your legacy?
No. I thought it would be a deeper sociological discussion.
yeah, we wanted to gently prod the insecurities of Australian men
toxic
through the great cricket prism.
But nope, we're just talking about Faf and understand that no one understands.
I think Rowan somehow has come across something there. Mainly he's come across the page Hottest Male Cricketers Topless.
What is it about the title of that then caused him to like freak out? Because that's ultimately what he was trying to do.
It was the title that did it for him.
It's just the URL, yeah.
Someone just reflected back to him exactly what he's done. You are looking at hot male cricketers. Oh, what am I doing? I thought I was looking at alphas and rigs.
Yeah.
Same thing.
You know when you're watching an extended period of time watching television, i.e. Netflix, and then like the show that you're watching finishes and you get the reflection from the sunlight in your room onto the screen and you can see yourself looking back at yourself, and then Netflix is asking like, are you still watching? And it's like this really like existential moment. I feel like for Rowan, I think it was, had the same moment where like the sun just like changed and the computer screen was looking back at him, and then he saw himself possibly shirtless, maybe pantless as well. I don't know what Rowan was doing.
No.
But maybe he sort of found this moment in himself, and that's the lasting legacy that we helped Rowan find within himself. All right. Official Dame C on Twitter. That's not a real name. Hashtag AskTGC. The demise of the Australian cricket team and the lack of accountability of CA has paralleled the rise of great cricketer. Do you accept responsibility for ruining Australia's national pastime?
No.
No,
I don't accept that one bit.
Really furrowed brow.
Yeah, I think
really?
So. What we did do is predict it years in advance. You know, we're Nostradamus, if anything.
Yeah.
If James Sutherland just followed us on Twitter back in 2012, none of this would have happened.
Mm.
Just try and hold up a mirror. All we're doing is holding up the mirror.
Looking glass.
And we don't like what's coming back, eh? Just like the bloke before. He doesn't like what he sees back.
I think Official Dame sees right. All right, last one for the week. Anonymous, dear TGC, we have recently had an AGM at my South England cricket club. Like most English people, the prospect of constitutional amendments and Machiavellian thrusts for power make this event the highlight of my winter. Unfortunately, my expectation of an orderly and jurisprudential evening was derailed by an Australian import who is more used to the rig and pipe world of grey cricket. His disruption was so total that we had to hear point 8 on the agenda before point six. My question is, seeing as there seems to be a culling of the alpha males within Australian cricket, are we likely to see an increase in the number of grey cricketers seeking refuge in the Northern Hemisphere expat community? I fear that it will only take a small number of such characters to be recruited by the club for there to be an upswell in support for our Australians' AGM motion for a minimum bicep circumference in the first and second 11s. I don't currently have a gym membership.
So I like how there's we're not actually going to get rid of these people. Yeah. They're just going to migrate.
Yeah, we're going to turn them into a migrant community. We're going to migrate them out. They're not wanted here. Like you know, like the bikies on the Gold Coast. You know what I mean? Get rid of them.
All right, another fantastic show, boys. Well done to all involved, and thank you so much for those hashtag AskTGCs. Just a last reminder: Adelaide and Perth live shows are on our Facebook page. You can go and get them. Thanks to Toby Shane, our producer, for the voiceovers and the production of such. Adrian Lung for the music, and of course, thanks to Usman Khawaja. Like us, subscribe us, rate us on iTunes. Leave comments, like one person whose username was Perfect Ratio, who said, "A polished production that exudes more professionalism than a pair of skins." My name's Ian Higgins, signing off for Dave Edwards and Sam Perry. We'll see you next week.